This
is the Pedestrian
Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up, my man Deion Sanders? We all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We gonna go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast
of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts.
Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you.
Gotcha,
you lead us,
gotcha.
Okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to another episode edition of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one only official UK Seahawkers podcast. Myself, Stuart Court, is as ever joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good, man. Yourself?
Not too bad. Countdown's on for you for more than the NFL season, though, isn't it?
I know, 10 days till the wedding day. It's vaguely terrifying. I think, can I put my wedding in the bin? Or is that, Rosie's not going to listen, so if I can do that, that'd be really good.
Yeah, we'll have to have an off-air chat about that. Before we get to speaking to our guest, a quick spin around the headlines coming out of the smoky Pacific Northwest. And really, there's only one spot to focus on, and that is at the punter position.
Today from Hauschka. And they're going to fake it. Ryan gonna float it for the touchdown. Seattle back in it. Gary Gilliam.
John Ryan was the final pre-Pete Carroll era Seahawk, having signed for the team in September 2008. In the past decade, has seen him become a staple and a very popular part of the team. That was until this happened this past April.
With the 149th pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Seattle Seahawks select Michael Dixon, punter, Texas.
Since the Australian kicker via Texas, Michael Dixon, was drafted, it was always a long shot for him to make the Seahawks team for another year. Until this weekend, when he asked and was granted his release, and he signed with the Bills about 25, 26 hours later. It's sad end of an era, though, Adam, for a position which doesn't get a lot of attention. John Ryan certainly has over the past week, but also the past decade.
No, he was great. I mean, there's so many memorable John Ryan moments, but I think ultimately him just being a good guy is the most important thing. And when we do introduce our guest, we probably should do that now and get some insight on him from someone that's probably seen him much closer than we have.
Yeah, so joining us this week for one of our stable of regular guests, now working for the Athletic Seattle, Michael Sean Dugar. How are we, sir?
I'm good. I'm good. I just took a nap, so I am full of energy right now.
You sound fresh, I have to say.
Yeah, I did a radio spot for an hour today at like 8 a.m., which is way earlier than I'm usually up and functioning. Like, so that was that wiped me out. But now I'm good.
So as Adam said, you've had a pretty cool view of John Ryan especially over the last few months with the competition with him and Michael Dixon. How have you seen him handle it? Obviously, a lot of people have praised him to the hilt for how he's handled it and brought along the rookie. How have you seen it from your vantage point?
I don't know. Maybe I'm just like a jerk, and I don't know if it's as praiseworthy as it's been perceived, I guess. Because I really do see both sides of how these veterans go about these youngsters who are brought into to make them unemployed, right? Like, that is what it is. Like, when you word it like that, you really get, like, how the dynamic is created. They draft this young guy who's cheaper than you, and they probably already think is better than you, or he's going to be very soon, and they ask you to not only hang out with dude all day, every day, they ask you to teach him how to make it so they can cut you. Like, that is... that, like, when Ben Roethlisberger was like, I'm not teaching Mason Rudolph anything. Or whoever they drafted. I think it was Mason Rudolph. Mm-hmm. I was like, you know what? I don't blame Ben one bit. You know what? Ben likes having a job. I do too. I can understand why he's, you know, hesitant to do that. Now, it doesn't mean Ben, I don't think Ben was like, I'm going to be a jerk to him. He was just like, if he figures it out, he figures it out. If he doesn't, he doesn't. it's not my job to do that. My job is to throw touchdowns. It's my job not to teach. I think Brett Favre is very similar to Aaron Rodgers in that way right away. It was like, man, it's not my job to teach dude how to play. So what John is doing and what KJ is doing, KJ's is just as kind of I don't want to say depressing, but it's pretty sad, you know, to watch. It's like it's the writing's just on the wall, and it's so clear, right? Their most high profile draft pick is the backup to KJ in a contract year for KJ. So I respect it. I definitely can respect it. I guess it is classy by definition of the word. To see John do it and just to watch him every day, hang out with the guy and teach the guy and mentor the guy that's clearly going to take his job. Not like down the road, like a couple years, like today. You know.
There's only going to be one punter on the roster, so at least KJ Wright can like. You know, do other stuff, and he's probably still going to make the team. Whereas John Ryan knows he's not making the team from April, which is crazy.
Right. Yeah. And that was the other thing too. I think it probably was easier because John had some time. Like he knew in April. I mean, that's why he took tequila shots when they drafted him. Right. Anytime you take tequila shots after something, you see the end is near. Right. At least KJ knows he'll get through the year at the very least. I think there's world for KJ to stay on the team long term, but I mean. It doesn't feel like it, right? He can at least play this next year with Bobby and Ken Norton. John is just like, dang, by September I'm out of here. Yeah. You know, so to see him handle it like that and to talk to him, you know, me and Greg Bell, we talked to John, that is maybe like a week before he asked for the release, and you could tell he knew what was up, but he was willing to just kind of face it. And now that part of it was most impressive for me because he could easily have just been like, it is what it is. Which he did say, but he went into his like, look, I'm at peace with this part of it, which I asked him specifically, was he at peace with it? And that's always interesting to hear guys from that perspective. So for that and for John to just become like the most beloved punter on any team like ever is pretty is pretty impressive, man. I mean, John Ryan is pretty recognizable and like the fact that I was just arguing with my friends that like baseball doesn't even have any superstars right now. Like Mike Trout walked into my family barbecue. No one really even know what he looked like. But John was a punter on a team in the upper left corner of the country and was pretty damn famous. So that's impressive. He was able to pull that off.
Yeah. So I'm going to take us off the running order quickly and just try and pick up on that KJ Wright thing. A lot of people have been saying like, you know, Earl Thomas isn't showing up, but he should be more like KJ Wright and Tyler Lockett, you know, and Frank Clark in their last year. My view of it was always that Earl Thomas probably had less to prove than KJ and Tyler, who I didn't feel had great years last year, but I hadn't even really thought about the fact that they might just be gone and had their backups replaced. And maybe that's why they're showing up to sort of prove their worth to the team. I didn't even think about that, but is that the vibe that's come through from camp?
I don't know if it's to prove their worth. I just don't feel like they want to deal with what a holdout brings. Like, if even it's probably, I don't know if it was discussed in Tyler's part because Tyler said it's not about the money. So he probably, him and his agent probably didn't have a holdout discussion. But I'm pretty sure those other guys waited at some point. And they just probably didn't want to deal with what comes with it, right? Because a lot of people would turn their backs on you that claim to have loved you in the past. Earl is seeing that.
Yeah.
Is seeing that now. I liked what Bobby Wagner said the other day about holdouts and just defensive players, because you could tell he kind of sees both sides. He sees what KJ's doing. You know, it's like, okay, he's here. He's gonna play it out and do that. But he also recognized, yeah, you could do that, and then the team just lets you walk, and then that was it. You know, so he also understands what Earl is doing, what he's doing, and that's kind of how I've been seeing it. Like, there's no right or wrong way. The way KJ is doing it is not the right way. The way Earl is doing it is not the right way. Neither one of them is wrong. You know, neither one of them guarantees you get a contract. So that's what I mean by right or wrong, right? KJ could easily play the year out and just let him walk. You know, Earl could come back and then not get paid. Or Earl could hold out and still not get paid. So neither one of those is right or wrong in my book. So I just get the sense that the guys who are here just didn't want to deal with that. I think KJ's here because of Ken Norton and Bobby more than anything, to be honest. Like, I think he's really just here to kick it with Ken Norton and, and Bobby every day, and because he loves those guys. Tyler's about the money. Frank's here because he has an obligation as a leader, he feels like, to step up and guide these guys. Like, it feels like most of these guys just don't want to let down the dude next to them. more than it's like some loyalty to the 12s or the organization or anything like that. And plus, Frank's one of those guys who's like, I got a mouth to feed. I'm securing all bags possible. I need all the money possible. And getting fined $40,000 a day ain't the way to do that.
So just back on the punter thing quickly. How impressive has Michael Dixon been, from your vantage point? Obviously, he's kicking the skin off the ball in LA last weekend. Was it that clear on the first day of the field you saw him?
Yeah, it was pretty clear from the jump. I like to consider myself pretty well versed in punter skills, just because when I was over at Idaho, there was they had an All American punter for 3 years. Believe it or not, his name is Austin Rico. I think he's unsigned right now, but yeah, he was an All American punter. I think he finished runner up in the Ray Guy once or twice. Like, he was one of the best in the nation at Idaho, and then obviously Washington State is down the road, and our punters sucked for years. So I watched really good punting and really bad punting, sometimes on the same day or back to back days, or, you know, it was actually kind of interesting. You know, we had one of our receivers punting last year. That's how bad. I don't remember his name, but Kyle Sweet was his name. He was doing like rugby style punts, and he was our best punter, and he was a receiver, so we were terrible. So when I watched Michael Dixon, it's easy to just be like, okay, yeah, this is it. John's out of here. Rookie minicamp. I was like, oh yeah, John's out of here. I mean, John was out of there the day they drafted Michael. Again, tequila shots, right?
Yeah,
John knew.
Yeah.
But I mean, rookie minicamp was like, oh yeah, John's out of here. He probably should have asked for his release then, so he could do some more shopping. But you know, Buffalo's punter, I think, just tore his knee up. So I mean, that the timing works there too.
Yeah, and he's back with house cure as well. Another thing with this Seahawks camp has been injuries, especially to the running back position. I think they're entering the game in Minnesota tomorrow night with Chris Carson and CJ Pro. So you tweeted about that you saw JD McKissick's injury and you didn't realise it was going to be as serious as it is. I mean, it sounds a painful injury, but was it as innocuous? Was it an innocuous thing, or was it just one of those things with McKissick? And how important is he to the team, do you think?
Well, it was, the more I thought about it, JD probably didn't break the bone in his foot on the play that I saw. And that's what I wish I would have reworded that in the tweet. But I did kind of clarify the wording in what I wrote about it afterwards. That's probably when he realized that something was seriously wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably like something probably happened in the actual game or earlier in practice or something. Somebody steps on it or something like that. Because what I saw was for real just something that could happen in walkthroughs. Like, he was just running and then ran off the field, right? Like 3 yards in front of me, and then start limping. Teammates are like, hey man, JD, you all right? You all right? He's ignoring him. So goes and sits down. Trainer comes, takes his shoe off, rubs the part of the foot that's broken. And then that was pretty much it. You know, it didn't look like that big of a deal. I don't even know if Pete Carroll came over, right, and checked on him. Like, it just looked real, real simple. But so I just should clarify that. I don't think I saw the injury happen. I do look like I saw when he realized, crap, my foot is killing me. Again, I'm not sure why. As far as what he means to the team, if you think about it, CJ and JD have the same skill set for the most part. Like, you're more likely to have CJ run between some tackles than JD, but as far as like a half receiver, half, you know, running back hybrid, they're both kind of the same. Entering the season, you didn't really need both of them, and now they probably will probably carry JD into the season, since it sounds like he'll be back by the London game at the very least, maybe earlier. So I think that, honestly, the injury kind of makes it more likely they keep him, which is kind of weird, because it was really just going to come down to him and CJ. They didn't need both of them. I get the sense that I've been writing in my projections that they keep five, meaning they keep Chris, Rashad, CJ, Mike Davis, JD. But the more and more it got into us, it seems like, okay, they weren't going to have five running backs in active every week, right? They just weren't going to do that if they were all healthy. And there would be no point in just stashing a running back on practice squad every week, right? Because eventually someone would just sign CJ or JD off of their practice squad. So that just would be a strange strategy to try to plan on long term. So actually now I think they keep JD and CJ and Rashad and Mike. I'm pretty sure about that now. It's kind of weird to put it that way. But this is good news for CJ, good news for Mike Davis. They really needed, I mean, the Rashad injury helped them. The JD one helps them a lot. Like they should be locks now. And they were far from locks before Rashad broke his finger.
I
watched obviously the league now, and in a way, I think you need two guys like CJ and JD because of the skill set they offer, whereas someone like a Mike Davis for me is maybe less important, but you obviously don't necessarily agree with that.
Well, I mean, JD, Mike, and CJ all have the same skill set too. If you break it, really they all do in terms of like I'm trying to think of a good example. It's not like
there's no Jonathan Stewart there.
Right, yeah, it's not like one guy's clearly first and second down, and then the other guy's the Christian McCaffrey. Yeah, that's a good example. Or like Marshawn and Turbin, or any team that Darren Sproles has been on. It's not like that, right? I can't believe Sproles is still in the league, by the way. Talk about running backs having short shelf life.
He's too small to touch. You can't
Darren
touch him.
Darren Sproles has been in the league forever, it feels like, on multiple teams. And in a league where running backs can't get new deals, right? He finds a way to stay employed. Good for him.
And he's had three serious injuries as well.
My kids are going to watch Darren Sproles and Frank Gore play football in 30 years' time. That's a fact.
Frank Gore is still in the league. Oh, my.
Where's Frank Gore?
Miami. Yeah, Frank's in my, like, yeah, he's back in Miami, actually, right? He was on the U. He's on those teams, right? Mm-hmm. I believe. For those guys to still be in the league is incredible. But, like, in that regard, they kind of all have the same skill set. You know, no one's really – everyone can be used on all three downs, and everyone can run between the tackles. Everyone can do everything. You probably don't want JD doing that too much. But for the most part, yeah, all of them do. That's why they were really probably not in great position, those final three – To all make it, because it's like, well, we don't need to keep any of you guys as a third down back. We can have Rashad do that, or Chris. What do we need all three of you to be backup third down backs? No, we're good. So I think that, yeah, you're right. Mike Davis, you can throw him in there too. So I guess Mike has a nod where I think he can possibly be used on the goal line. I guess that's where I would maybe separate him, whereas I don't think CJ and JD could. But Mike also doesn't have a rushing touchdown. So how useful is he on the goal line, right?
Do any of them for the Seahawks? CJ Procise.
In terms of rushing touchdowns, yeah.
Just CJ Procise against Philadelphia.
Yeah. Now, JD has one against Indy last year. Like, oh, yeah. Carter, too. CJ, I don't know if he had one against New England. I think he had a rushing touchdown against Philly, though.
Yeah, and then he got like a 75-yard run.
Yeah, on like the first or second drive, he broke for 70 yards. Yeah, and then Chris had one in the preseason, I want to say, against the Chargers last year. That was on the goal line, I believe.
I feel he had a passing one against Tennessee last year as
well.
He
did, again, have a receiving touchdown against the Titans in week three. Yeah, so in terms of rushing touchdowns, there ain't a bunch to go around, right? No one should feel great about their job on that in that group, and no one does, for what it's worth. No one's like, I'm a lock. You know, like no one, because you can't, right? Chris was a starter last year, yeah, for 3 weeks. It's not like he came in there and was a starter for 3 years on some Marshawn stuff. Yeah. He's started for 3 weeks. It's a former seventh round pick, right?
So you said with John Ryan's reaction to Michael Dixon, do you think Chris Carson had a similar reaction, but different to the Rashad Penny pick, who just kind of got his head down and just grinded all summer and now it's paying off in camp?
I think when all the running backs started talking to all of them, they knew what was up when they drafted Rashad. I don't think any of them thought that spelled doom like it did for John, because like you guys mentioned, you can only have one punter, you can keep crop of running backs. But I think they all knew. They were like, oh, well, he's the guy now, you know? I mean, why you have to think that, right? He's a first-round pick, I think, because even Chad Morton, the running backs coach, he told me, you know, he had to remind Chris, like, nah, man, if you want the job, go get it. Right? Yeah, we drafted Rashad, but go get the job if you want it. You know, I think, and I'm pretty sure he gave that spiel to all of them, right? Especially a guy like CJ. It's like, CJ, you've been here longer than anybody. You know, go get the job. You've proven yourself that you can play. You know, and Mike's been in the league since 2015, so it's like, yeah, man, go get the job. Don't just give up already. So I think initially they all knew what was up, and I mean they still do, right? They can see who gets the first team reps. I mean, as much as the team doesn't want to like reveal the depth chart, they have one, right? As soon as they shuffle, like they go from one drill to another, coaches yelling, all right, two's on me, two's over here, one's on the field, three's over, like, come on. There are one, twos, and threes, and everyone knows who they are, right? So they know the pecking order. They see how it goes. So, yeah, when Rashad went down, now that JD's down, it sucks, but they know it's like, hey, this is a better chance that I have a job. Every time I talk to Mike Davis, he brings up being cut by the Niners. His screensaver on his phone is an alert of him.
Yeah, we saw that.
By the Niners. I was like, I wanted to tell him we were talking, like, dude, let that go. But you know what? Whatever motivates him, good for him, right? I was going to remind him, like, dude, the Seahawks cut you too. But he really, really didn't like being cut by the 49ers. Like, he's still angry at them. If he's healthy in their game against them, he's going to try to run over the coach. Like, I'm pretty sure. He is really, really angry.
But he was a high draft pick as well, and he's like fourth round, was he?
Fourth and fifth round pick in 2015. Yeah. Like, yeah, they went and got him. They believed in him, it sounded like. And then I think part of his beef is that he doesn't feel like he was given a fair shot to prove himself. And they did have a few, had a bunch of other backs at that time, too. They were weird at that time.
Yeah. So last year when we spoke to you after or during training camp, you talked about how unfun it looked to tackle Eddie Lacy, which also turned out to be quite easy. Brandon Marshall seems to be torturing, bullying, abusing or teaching Trey Flowers quite a bit. What's that been like watching the rookie again against one of the best over the last 5-10 years or so in Brandon Marshall?
I'm always curious how that works. I think it works better the way Brandon is doing it. Like, all right, I'm going to call you out. I'm going to have you come go against me in drills, and I'm going to beat you, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. And then, like, even today, they were out there on the field by themselves after practice while we were talking to Pete. They were out there for, like, 20 minutes just going over, like leverage and just footwork and releases and everything. I think that works a lot better. You know, that iron sharpens iron type thing that people talk about? I don't think it works if you just whoop someone's butt every day. Right. And then they just don't get better. They're just getting their butt whooped. Like, if that was the case, Jermaine would be great. Right. He was going against Cliff and Mike B every day for years. And all they did was fight. and Jermaine didn't get no better from that. Right. Like, it don't make you that much better unless you go about it the right way. Right. If you just beat me up every day, I don't get better at fighting. I get better at getting beat up. So, you know, I think the way Brandon is going about that with Trey is really good. I mean, you can get better. I think, like, guys got better as receivers going against Sherm, because Sherm is one of those guys who, like, look, this is the route you're going to run, and this is how I'm going to stop it. And then he'd stop it. And then afterwards, like, see, look, this is how I knew you were going to run that route. Like, there's got to be some teaching involved. It can't just be you just bull rush Jermaine for 2 years and practice every day, and Jermaine just gets better at bull rushes. Nah, man, now he's just like, damn, I can't block a bull rush. Now, same thing with all the young lineman, really, but Brandon is so willing to teach, but he does it in a way, he's like, he's not just gonna teach you just like beforehand, he's gonna cook you first and then figure it out. Like, I saw him actually get matched up against Trey, I think two days ago, and then just burned him for a touchdown, and then afterwards jogging back, he's talking to him, it's just like, oh wow, that's just knock the man's confidence and then try to bring it back up. Whatever works. And talking to Trey, that works for Trey. He likes that.
Does Marshall sort of carry himself like you'd expect a star, like diva and inverted commas wide receiver would do? Like, do you look at the receiver group and say, like, that's the star and those are the other guys?
No, I think that's good, because I don't think anyone's really good enough to come up in here like that, especially someone like Brandon, who I don't think he's ever been to the playoffs. So I don't care how many times, like Pro Bowl or whatever. Like, this is a what have you done for me, you know, lately league. Unless you're a backup quarterback, then it doesn't matter. You can just get a job. As long as your agent's good, you can get a tryout whenever. That Josh Johnson dude who keeps getting tryouts, he's got the best agent in sports. So I guess that kind of doesn't apply to backup quarterbacks. But no, I mean, I even heard the other day that Brandon came into the locker room when he got hired or got signed, and maybe not right away, was just like, walked up to Doug and was like, yeah, this is your team. Do you? I'm just here to, you know, try to win.
Cool.
I'm not here to step on toes. Can't remember how long ago I was told that. But so Brandon came in with the right attitude. And you can tell in his press conference when he got signed, he was like, I've never wanted to be like the number one receiver. I always wanted to have the number one tandem. And then he just started rallying off all the guys from past teams that he had been on. He was like, me and Decker were good, and me and I can't remember. But he talked about having being a good tandem, and that's important. Like, at least he has that mindset, and he has been on some good tandems. I think him and Doug is a really good tandem. So that's kind of where Brandon's at with it. And Doug is like super alpha male, but not in the, he's matured in the way that he's not just going to walk around just like, you know, with his nose up. He's humbled him. He's humble, he's mature, and he's helping those young guys out, and also recognizing that he's the dopest dude in the room. It's a good dynamic there. I don't think they have any egos, and no one can really afford to, right? Ain't nobody here that good. You know, Odell Beckham's in the locker room.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So is Brandon Marshall making this team for you then?
Yeah, it feels like now, after I've gotten to look at everyone and looking at the depth charts and how they perform, the top four is pretty set. I was actually going to tweet this earlier. I just forgot because we can't tweet during practice. So I always have to save my stuff as a draft and send it later. But I think if Jerron Brown is your fourth best receiver, your team's probably pretty good, right? Because he's like a third or fourth guy, right? If he's your third or fourth guy, you're straight. Right, so if you got Brandon, Doug, and Tyler, that's a pretty good starting three. I mean, that's probably as good as anyone else in the division. If I run through the division real quick, yeah, the Rams have a pretty good few guys. Actually, the Rams three is probably that's probably better than the Rams three, or just right up there. And then I don't know who the Cardinals have. They have Larry, I guess, and whoever else. But yeah,
John Brown. But yeah, no one major.
Yeah, who's the fourth team in the division? I can't.
San Francisco.
Wow. Oh, the Niners don't have anybody. So, yeah, I mean, that's as a trio, that's pretty good. You have three guys who have been to the Pro Bowl. I would put that up against anyone's three in the league, probably at this, in terms of this, that little credential right there. I know Tyler didn't go as a receiver, but he's been there. So yeah. I'd be interested to go look at how many teams have three starting receivers who've been to the Pro Bowl. So that's pretty. I mean, that's pretty good. So yeah, I think Brandon will be on the team, and I think David Moore is probably going to be the fifth guy. And this is that weird time of year where we're really interested in who the fifth guy is, as if the fifth guy has any more than like 10 catches in a season. But yeah, I think David Moore will be that guy.
Yes, obviously you mentioned Doug. Obviously, he's missed most of camp. I think he got injured in the first or second day. Has he been in that coach's role that you talk with? But what Brandon's been doing with Trey, has Doug been doing similar with the younger guys like David Moore, Amara Darbo, and the rest of them?
When I talk to Doug about that stuff, it doesn't feel like he's spending a lot of time doing it. Doug is, at this point, really interested in like who those guys are as people and as dudes, and making sure they're just taking care of themselves and being pros.
Yeah.
Like, he wants to make sure that, you know, they're taking care of their body. He wants to make sure that they're studying at the right time, so they have the right mindset every day in practice. You know, that super veteran stuff. He's like, if they get right and run routes, like, they've been doing that. They're either going to know how to run routes and releases or not. Like, they come to him for stuff, but it sounds like for Doug's way of leading and mentoring doesn't involve like sitting there and teaching you how to beat this coverage. Maybe he does that. It just wasn't articulated to me. It sounds like more his focus is, all right, take care of your body, take care of this, learn how to do this and that as a pro. And the more, this is kind of separate, but the more I hear when guys talk about how much they're learning to be a pro and take care of their body, I really just like to imagine that those are code words for they learn that they just can't go out and get drunk the night before they have practice or a game, or just party or whatever. Because, I mean, it seems pretty simple. Like, you have a job. Go to work every day and do this. You know, stop eating McDonald's. Oh, it also sounds like a lot of those dudes learn they just can't eat a bunch of fast food. I think that's part of a lot of it. Like, Chris Carson talked about having to give up chicken wings this offseason. And in my head, I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. Then I thought about it later. I was like, he didn't know that? I was like, you didn't know you just couldn't eat a bunch of hot wings from American Deli in Atlanta in the offseason? Like, no, dude, get a nutritionist or whatever. Like, so that's like code for me. I don't know if that's the case, by the way. I just like to speculate that these dudes are so used to being in college and just like getting just hammered at their college or something like that, or going out and partying, But when they have like 6 a.m. special teams meetings or whatever and realize, oh, I can't do that. I got to go to bed and I can't just eat tacos at 2 in the morning. I should like eat salads and and drink smoothies after practice. I really think that's what that's code for. But I think Doug has seen that over the years so much derail guys who have talent that is his focus more than anything.
So I'm watching Hard Knocks a couple of days ago, and funny you say that, Hugh Jackson was telling Baker Mayfield, you know, come in early, come in the same time as Tyrod Taylor and do your workout, whatever. And I saw you tweeting that you'd never seen Hard Knocks before, which seems like a crazy thing. But then we're talking a bit about it off air, and you said you'd love to see Seattle on Hard Knocks. I'm like, yeah, I'm not so sure. But then you're explaining a few reasons why, and it sounds like a few interesting things that they could show that, you know, that the Seahawks wouldn't like to be shown. And you probably have a bit of insight into that.
Yeah, I want to see the Seahawks on there. Just not – spite's not the word. Just like I don't know. They're so guarded that they would be forced to just have a lot of things revealed, and I would enjoy seeing them be angry at that. So I think spite's the word. I'm not sure. They haven't done anything to me, so I don't want to call it spite. But, yeah, it's that. If there's a word for it, that. Just because they're so – they have so just many little rules about things. Like the other day, I got told I can't sit down during practice. Because I was really tired for some reason, and they were practicing indoors, and they just have like the long metal benches. I was just off to the side. I would no players near me, no equipment near me, just out of the way. Dude tells me after practice, like, man, you can't sit down during practice. I'm like, what? I can't sit down? He's like, no, man, media can't sit down. And I thought he was joking, so it was like this awkward pause. He was like, yeah, no. Like, are you kidding me? It's like, what kind of rule is that?
And you were about to be the fourth team running back. They needed you.
I mean, if the check is right. But yeah, that was the dumbest rule. This rule is dumb. The rule that I can't tweet the music whenever the practice is closed is just stupid, right? Like, one of these days, I'm just going to be so angry, I'm just going to do it. And I'm not going to do it like one tweet by one tweet, right? Because someone will catch on to that. What I'll do is, you know how if you use Twitter, the app, you can just write like a whole thread, but you don't have to publish the whole – you can publish the whole thread at once. So I'm just going to have every song just the whole day, like 30 of them, and then just send it right after practice. And maybe it's like a middle finger to their, you know, guy who runs their Twitter. Because that's the dumbest rule, right? Like the plays don't like coincide with – or the songs don't coincide with the plays they're running or their schemes or anything. It's just a random playlist. It's stupid.
So it's not like Pete Carroll's draft clues.
No, it's not like Pete Carroll's terrible draft clues. those are absolutely terrible. I did learn the other day that Pete does have some like executive control over the playlist that does go on at practice. And apparently like he waves off a bunch of Drake songs. He doesn't like a ton of Drake, so like they'll play something and he'll just be like, nope, skip it, go to the next song. And who knew that Pete was anti-Drake, right? They had him at practice once. I think they won the Super Bowl that year too. So should have Drake over more often. So for those, like, that's the Seahawks, right? They have those type of silly rules. So I think to have them on Hard Knocks and to just get those behind the scenes conversations. Like last year, think of all the behind-the-scenes conversations you would have loved to have, right? These wouldn't have been on Hard Knocks, right? But like when Jeremy Lane got traded but didn't, right? Like put me in the room after they have to put Jeremy back out there, right? That had to be super awkward. Cutting Dwight Freeney to keep David Moore around, at the time, right? That seems just ridiculous. Any conversation with Malik McDowell, any of them, just pick one. After the ATV, when he shows up. After he gets arrested in Georgia, just anything. Pete's convo with Earl after he just slammed Bobby. Pete's convo with Earl after the come get me thing in Dallas. Like, think of all the great, like, damage control Pete has to do every so often. I want all of that on camera. The fights and stuff, whatever. You get fights at any training camp. I mean, last year, obviously, Jermaine getting punched by Frank would have been.
That would have been on there.
Yeah, that would have been pretty crazy. They would have. I don't know if they would have had Frank mic'd up, or did they have everyone mic'd up? That's actually a good question. But if they did, that would have been pretty crazy. You know what? They would have had Michael Bennett mic'd up, and he was in there swinging too. So that day would have been pretty crazy. But like, oh, you know what? Last year them mic'd up would have been nuts, because that's when that Sherman piece came out, and ESPN, and that and the lead part of that Sherman piece was him, you know, cussing out Russell Wilson and telling him he sucks, right? And I think stuff like that happening in practice last year would have just been great to see. Like, I really want to see that. I want to see Pete Carroll's behind the scenes stuff. I want to see Tom Cable cussing out, you know, the O-line when they watch film stuff. Because, like, there's so much film available of the O-line that there's just – you can just pull up a screenshot of all five linemen getting torn up and Russell just running for his life. So if we can do that, right, on Twitter, imagine what Tom Cable can have their little video assistants pull up and he's just slamming, just nailing into all of them. I want to see all of that. So I really – however the Seahawks can get on Hard Knocks, I forget the rules, get them on there. That would be fantastic. I would be tuned – I'd live tweet it with all the fans every day, and we'd watch it together like a family, and it would be fantastic.
Well, on the Tom Cable tape, I wonder if maybe he just wasn't watching tape for the last 3 years at all. That's why we didn't get any better.
there was something. He was definitely the problem there, for sure, 100%.
Yeah. The Malik McDowell thing's interesting because obviously the team and he take a lot of heat. You know, it's a tragic situation that is just awful for the guy. But I sort of wonder if the team are doing the whole thing a disservice by not giving any information about what happened, considering they probably know what happened right now. It almost seems that they've either got something to hide or they're just not, like, if there was nothing wrong with what happened, they could just release a statement explaining it and it would all be fine. And I kind of feel that by not saying anything, that they sort of keep the story going. And for a team that's trying to block out as much noise as possible this offseason, that's something that for me is still like a real open end.
Yeah, the Malik thing, the way they're handling it, doesn't do Malik any favors. It doesn't do the team any favors. I think what's happening is, this is just my guess from just murmurs here and there, it's just there's going to be some, I don't know if they're going to have like a court battle, but there's going to be some type of, I don't want to say the word litigation. I can't think of words right now, but some type of something to happen where what they say on record can be used against them, because there is some money to be collected here, and because I know they have stuff in their contract, those rookies saying like, hey, you can't go do this or this or this. Oh, you saw it on Hard Knocks.
Yeah, and Baker Mayfield.
They're telling Baker he can't skydive or whatever, right? Yeah, that stuff is actually in there. Like, you can't. It'll tell you, like, yeah, don't go cliff diving or
I
whatever.
I think they said you can do it, but you can't get hurt, which seems a really stupid thing to say.
I think also that's a good point. You can do it, but yeah, if you get hurt, like if you go go-kart racing and you crack your head open, that's on you. That's mm-hmm. not us, and we will take all the money we gave you and not give you any more. So I think, and I also think they're having some issues with the family. It feels like they're being told not to reveal any details, and it also feels like the communication just on Malik McDowell's side, maybe not from him, maybe agent or his mom or whoever, is the communication there has been terrible. It feels like the reason it feels like Pete Carroll doesn't have anything to give us is because he doesn't have anything. I think he got the bare bones, like, this is what happened, this is why he's hurt, you know, and then maybe some updates along the way, but then after that it doesn't feel like they're giving him anything. So I think that's really what it is. They are hiding stuff, but it's not their usual hiding stuff. It's usual, like, hey, man, I ain't got nothing to tell you about Malik because I ain't talked to Malik in so long. I ain't talked to his agent. I ain't talked to nobody. So that's why we don't know anything. And then you could tell after a while they're just waiting for the right time to be able to cut him. And I feel like they didn't want to give anything publicly because, yeah, this is going to get to where they're trying to recoup some money or figure out the money situation, because it's tricky with that type of injury and him being out so long and never playing a snap, but him also being a second round pick. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a lot going on there, and I just have to speculate a lot of this just because
that makes sense.
They're not telling us anything.
Obviously, one main thing I've noticed, just to pick it up a bit, have you named the defense with Bobby Wagner yet?
No. So
I've got one.
Bobby is picky. What you got?
I got the Hanson brothers.
The Hanson?
Have you seen Slapshot?
Slapshot. The movie? No, I've never seen the movie Slapshot.
So it's an old hockey movie, and they have these two twin brothers who just go around just belting all the opposition from side to side.
Okay.
So they're the Hanson brothers. So I kind of feel like Bobby and KJ could be the Hanson brothers of the team.
Let me write that one down. I'm keeping like a note in my phone. Because the other day I was like, here, Bobby, I got some nicknames for you. And then I showed him the list and we went over it briefly. He was like, nope, this sucks. This sucks. This sucks. This is stupid. What does that even mean? He just slammed all of them. He also doesn't want anything that has boom in it. So
agreed.
There were a few of those. He was just like, nope, no boom. He liked, dang it, I can't remember which one he liked. There was like 15 of them that I ran by. I think he liked Trap Squad was the one that, or Soul Snatchers. I think those were, he liked one a little bit, but it wasn't enough. He was like, yeah, let's come back with some more. So
okay.
Next time I see him, probably be when they, probably like next Wednesday or something, I'll try and have a batch for him. I don't want to just keep giving him one each time. I want to give him like 10 or 10 or 12. So I'm gonna keep gathering them each time. It's tough. It's really tough. Whoever came up with Legion of Boom, man, they lucked up there. So, that's good.
Yes. So one reason, obviously, Bobby Wagner wants to name for the defense is he's the almost de facto with Noel and obviously everyone else that left from that defense. We had Michael Robinson on last week's pod, and we asked him when he was at VMAC a few weeks ago if he noticed any difference or any new leaders or new voices. He said, no, the voices have just been there. They're just a bit louder. Is that something you've seen without Michael Bennett, without Richard Sherman, without Cam, that the voices are the same? They're just coming a bit higher volume than before?
I think just an overall aspect of football and leadership, I think it gets – like, obviously, leaders are important for the entire team, but I really think it's broken up into subsections more than we discuss. Like, you can be the leader on the offense and no one on the defense even like care about a word you say, right? Because you're really two different teams in a lot of ways, right? And then even then, you know, your position group matters a bit more, you know, in that regard. So you don't even really need to be that like that loud of a voice for the whole team as long as you have like the position group respect, right? Like Bradley already has that. Obviously, it's not to the same degree as Cam or Earl. But Bradley has it, right? Frank really, really has it. You know, the running back group, it's up for grabs. Doug really has it. You know, Dwayne has it, right? So Bobby's like, dude, I've always had it. Bobby's like, you know how long I've been good on this team? You know how long I've been a captain on this team? Like, this isn't new. And I get why he says that. He's also a little bit wrong. Like, come on. We know Cam was like, if the defense had a soul, it was Bobby. Bobby can be the shoulders, I guess, if we have to give the whole defense a body part. Richard can be the mouth or whatever. Bobby gets to be the shoulders because he and Dwight Howard, I think, are the only people to ever publicly shout out their own shoulders, which is what Bobby did the other day. He gave a shout out to how often he works out his shoulders, which is super weird, but kind of cool. The difference I notice in Bobby is kind of how he works a microphone now. Maybe he was doing it before and I didn't notice, but I think I would have caught it because that's something I'm pretty aware of. Like his message on the radio in May to Earl, like, oh, you know, we miss Earl, we love Earl, we want him here, blah blah blah. Like he took time out to do that on the radio unprompted, and I he knew that Earl would get that message. He knew Earl would like the message. Earl did get the message. Earl did like the message. Earl reached out and said thank you. So you know, he knew that. He knew that would work, right? Like, that's something I haven't seen him do in the past. Just yesterday when he gave a message to the organization, I think, letting them know, like, look, I plan to be here my whole career, and I plan on having KJ here next to me. You know, like, how could you ever let a guy like KJ walk, right, if he's going to come here and be here when he could be holding out, do the right thing, you know? How could you let a guy like that go? Like, that's a message to the organization. Like, pay KJ, right? Like, we're a package deal. We don't have a nickname yet, but we're a package deal. Pay KJ. And it's that kind of savvy in front of a microphone. It was what Richard had for a long time until kind of went off the rails a little bit. But Richard had it, right? He knew that if I say this way at this platform, that it can do this without me having to explicitly say it. And Bobby's aware of that. Michael Bennett was really aware of that. The way him and Richard Sherman disagreed with the Black Lives Matter thing a few years ago was a good example of that. Richard said something dumb like "All Lives Matter" and gave some really bad analogy. And Michael Bennett vehemently disagreeing, instead of going to Richard in the locker room, decided, oh, no, I'm going to do this at my press conference to make it an even louder message. Like, that was calculated and that was intentional. He actually revealed that in his book. I had already known that. But, like, that was intentional because he knew how to work the microphone. So Bobby is doing that as well. Yeah. You know, it's also when we ask about expectations, Bobby's like, we're going to be good. You know, there's forget what the outside world thinks. I don't care. I was here when we didn't think we were going to be good. I was here when they thought we were going to be good. I'm still here when now they don't think we're going to be good. I know we're going to be good. I've thought it the whole time. You know, those type of messages, that's how you build that, like, mindset in your room. As much as these guys don't claim to not, like, care about media or whatever, all of them do. All of them watch ESPN. All of them get alerts on their phone. All of them read articles. If not because they're searching them, much of these guys search their names on Twitter after practice, like right after practice. It's like super obvious. But even if they don't do that, you know, their parents send them stuff. Yeah, their coach, their college coaches, college roommates, their girlfriend, their wife, they get all this stuff. It gets to them. Even someone like Russell. Russell doesn't care, but it gets to them, right? Trey Flowers told me he had to get his mom to stop sending him articles, right? Because he was like, I don't care. Good or bad, he was just like, Mom, stop. So and it's not just him, you know, it's all those guys. Eddie Lacy made the mistake of going through his Twitter mentions.
Ooh, oh God.
Mistake number one as a athlete. Mistake number two, doing it as an athlete whose weight is an issue. My goodness, Twitter is brutal. If you're worried about your weight or your image, stay off the internet. Because people are absolutely evil. And now there's GIFs and memes and stuff. But just to rope it back to Bobby, Bobby's got a good hold of just like how to set the tone in the locker room and how to set the tone and like keep the culture going without having to just give a bunch of rah-rah speeches, because that's just really not him. It's really not him to just get up and reenact every halftime speech from every sports movie, right? No, he's just going to go out there and be great. And if he needs to say like something real quick, he will. He's figured out how to get messages across to multiple different people. Some people you can come up and just scream at them. Some people you got to put your hand on their shoulder and talk to them. Sometimes you have to blast people publicly to get the message across. That's really a good leader, to learn how to manage a bunch of different egos and personalities and kind of manage a bunch of different troops.
So I'm one of those guys in the outside that probably thinks we're not going to be very good, which, you know, I hope I'm wrong. But if I am going to be wrong, it's probably going to be down to number three, as it always is. How's he been this year and what in the off season, and how's his relationship been going with Schottenheimer, who's a guy who gets quite a lot of heat on Twitter, and not enough heat for his visor, but heat for his heat for the plays. But the visor really has to go, which maybe you can talk to him about that hat, which I'm just not feeling that at all. But what's he been like as an offensive coordinator, and how's Russell fed off that?
I like that Brian Schottenheimer makes it clear that, like, oh, yeah, no, Russell's really good. You know, he's done some really great things, great quarterback. But we're going to work on this, and that. I come in like, he's great, but I didn't come in here to just, you know, praise him. I came in here to fix things. They brought me in here to make him better, and I'm going to do that. That remains to be seen. But as much as, like, Schottenheimer hasn't said or done anything too interesting, other than say that they plan on being able to run the ball when the other team expects them to run it, which was a terrible line. One of the PR guys was just trying to explain it to me. He was like, no, we just want to be more powerful. And just, you know, it's more of a just like toughness thing. And I was like, yeah, sure. That was planning to run the ball against 8-man boxes is just stupid, right? Like, you can't spin those words. And he specifically said 8-man boxes, right? Like, no, that's dumb. You see 8-man box, you should probably throw it. Like, come on, man.
He got lit up on Twitter about that.
Yeah, because I mean, rightfully so, right? Like, sometimes Twitter is on point. That was one of those times. Like, no, you genius. If you see an 8-man box, throw it to Doug or something. Like, throw it to Brandon. I think against their against the Chargers, getting a little off topic, the Chargers had, I think, 11 guys in the box on both of Chris Carson's goal line runs, including the one that ended in the fumble. I'm pretty sure they had 11, at least 10.
It was jumbo both times.
Yeah, it's like, that was a perfect example of, like, Brian, this is why that's a bad idea. It's like, I understand, you know, the pride. You want to be able to just beat up the guy next to you or across from you, whatever. Sure. There's also tucking that pride and realizing we're not there yet. You know, you gotta know your strengths, right? Like, KYP, know your personnel. So that line was pretty bad. And then Chris Carson's fumble, I hope maybe that light bulb will come on. Like, dude, no. If motion some guys or something, bluff them or something to just go. If you know they're bringing more guys than you're blocking, that's just dumb. it's a numbers game. I'm not a genius. I know that. I can count. 11's more than 9 or whatever. Or I guess it'd just be minus 1 with Russell. Right? That's pretty bad. But other than that, anything Brian says or does, I'm not too worried about too much. It's going to be the final product. What was really interesting was having Doug tell me about just how much better he thinks Russell is. And then the things that he was saying that he's better at were just so simple. You know, it was like, yeah, you know, they've been working with him on his footwork and dissecting the defense. You know, before Russell would see something and not really know what to do with it. He was just really good at making plays, so he made a play. Now he can see something and know how to attack it. Doug's also calculated around a microphone. I think he knew what that would do, but I didn't sensationalize it in a way that like it become like a hot topic, which I think is pretty good. But if you read those comments, you're like, whoa, did Doug just say Russell can't read a defense? Because he did.
I'm sorry to forget, but Doug seems to be the main guy that was in support of Bevel. So for him to praise Schottenheimer for that also seems a bit weird.
Well, Doug's also all about accountability, right? Like he's all about, like he was on Bevel's side because he didn't want the blame taken off of the players. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that is maybe not wanting the blame taken off of Russell to an extent, because he knows they have game plans. They have a plan. And they know they need to go execute it. I think after the Giants game, when they had a crappy half last year, mm-hmm. they fixed it in the second half. He was like, no, it wasn't the players. We just needed it wasn't the coaches. Sorry. We just needed to execute better. He said that after a few games where it's just like, man, Bevel's not the problem. We need to execute the plays. And so his thing is all accountability. So I think he likes that part of Schottenheimer, in addition to, you know, helping Russell with whatever Russell needs help with. But Doug doesn't come across as a guy who just likes the blame unfairly placed on people, you know, whether that's the coaches or players or the offensive line. I've heard him defend the offensive line a few times. Like, everyone has a job to do. And if you do your job, we'll play well, right? And we'll win games. That's where Doug comes from. So I know he was – also, he can't just keep saying, like, I wish Bev was here, right? Eventually, he's got to just embrace that Brian's here and Brian's in charge. Yeah. So I've been really watching the dissection of just reading things by Russell. A lot of that will come when I get my NFL Game Pass and I can go back and watch the film a little bit more. But, like, that's the most interesting part of it for me is, like, really seeing if Russell, when he makes mistakes or getting on him – you know, about, you know, bonehead decisions and stuff, or all that extra stuff he's doing in the backfield, or even if it's just little stuff like dropping too far back. I think that's been an issue. The more I like talk to some more people who are a little bit more knowledgeable than me, him dropping too far back and that putting his tackles in a bad spot. Because you think about it, if he drops back, you know, he takes a 7-step drop and then drops back even more. Man, a guy like a Fetty or Dwayne, that's a lot of ground for them to be protecting, not knowing where the heck the quarterback is. All right. So like that makes it tougher on them. You still got to hold do your job. But like it's little things like that, that when they say stuff like footwork or, you know, having a strong base so he can make the throws. Like, I think that's what I'm watching for. And we'll see more of it in the regular season. But like in terms of just what do I expect Russell to really do differently now that this guy is in charge? Those are some of the things.
Also, one other thing with Schottenheimer's weird comments. Did you understand the relevance of number 53?
Number 50, I think I missed that.
He said, was it? I can't remember what he exactly said.
It was something about your rushing attempts plus your successful passes. If that equals 53, you'll win the game.
You're rushing. No, I missed that. I missed that. I think
your buddy Stephen Cohen reported on it. I may be wrong, but it was someone. It was definitely a fairly well, maybe it was Curtis Crabtree, someone like that was reporting. He did it in a press conference a couple of weeks ago where he was saying that they check the numbers and if you rush plus pass completions equals 53, you'll invariably win the game.
Wow. That sounds like a terrible formula. I mean, I'm pretty sure if I go back and find the actual quote, then I miss a lot of the press conferences because I'm usually interviewing individual people. So I have to go back and read the transcript. But overall, it seems like coaches just in general, and our guy Ben Baldwin at The Athletic is great at pointing this out, and it really explains
it. Was Ben, I think, who pointed it out.
Oh, yeah, it probably was. He's good at dissecting dumb coach speak. Is that these guys really still believe that, like, running the game and controlling the ball, controlling the time of possession, running early equals, like, establishing dominance or whatever and leads to more wins. There's no numbers to back up any of that. Like, any of these old school philosophies. Like, Ben came on my podcast and was like, this is why, or, like, there is no correlation between being good at running the ball and having success at play action, right? And there's plenty of articles that I read before he had came on to back that up. And I was like, that is fascinating. Because you will hear coaches who have been doing this since the 80s mm-hmm. swear by, yeah, the run sets up the pass. And it's like, no, there's nothing to suggest that that's a thing. There's nothing to suggest that, like, controlling the time of possession has any impact on how much better you are at a game. There's nothing to suggest that, like, running the ball, establishing the run early, another cliche. There's nothing to suggest, like, statistically that makes you any better of a team and makes you more likely to win the Super Bowl. Like, it's fascinating, right? Like, it's better to be good at running the ball than not. That's the simplest way to put it. But throwing the ball is a better way to go win games. Like, there's just tons of numbers to back that up. And, like, every coach across the country seems to just not get that.
Ben has completely changed how I watch football. I have to, like, I've read all his articles, and it makes, I have to say, he's completely changed my view on all of it.
Yeah, same here. It's so simple, right? Because you want to be like, well, dang, how come none of these teams can figure this out, right? But they really haven't. It seems like the Eagles actually kind of have, to be honest. The Patriots a little bit, too. It's like, you don't need some high-profile, expensive outside receiver who's 6'3", and you don't need some workhorse, like, running back to you know, go be dominant, right? You don't need a Zeke and a Julio Jones. You can go out there, and your number one receiver can be Alshon Jeffrey, and your number one running back can be whoever the Eagles running back was, and your quarterback can be Nick Foles, and you can go win, right? Like, yeah. If you're the Patriots, you can have a bunch of small white dudes as your receivers, and then you can have just whoever running the ball, and you can go win. Like, they've cracked the code in that regard, and Ben seems like he's cracked the code too. I haven't told him this yet, but I think in a few years, it wouldn't be surprised if, like, some team like the Browns hires him to run their analytics department.
Like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, he's. I hope they don't. I hope he stays with us, but that'd be really good for him, because I think he's cracked, like, a code. Him and a bunch of people at Football Outsiders have figured out something that they're like half a decade ahead of NFL teams. And I'm not even joking. Like, I think they've figured stuff out that is going to take the smartest of NFL teams another 5 to 10 years to really get and implement and get guys to believe. So that's absolutely fascinating. These coaches haven't gotten that yet.
Yeah, as obviously, me and you have had a few conversations about this. I think it might be one of your favorite things to work on in the coming months. Pete Carroll's vocabulary at certain junctures and certain points is, beautiful, is what he used to describe a broken finger for Rashad Penny. Have you managed to work out what certain words mean yet? Like, your second year on the beat, or?
Yeah, I'm actually, one of my coworkers pitched the idea. He's like, you should put together, like, a not a vocab list, but almost just like a guide to a Pete Carroll press conference, or just like a guide to Pete Carroll. I might do that. I gotta say, it would take me a while, because I'd have to go back and read a bunch of examples. But yeah, his terminology with stuff is just so weird, and he's articulate too, but then sometimes you transcribe some of this stuff and it just makes no sense. It's just like, I don't know where to put the periods or the commas or the semicolons or the m dashes, just because he's just rambling. And then some, like, he used the word he was precocious the other day, and then he used something else the other day, where I was like, wow, dude, you are smart. But sometimes he just, yeah, like, he said his surgery went beautifully, or, like, someone asked how far behind Clayton Wilson is, because Clayton Wilson's been hurt, and he just came back, and he was like, yeah, he's tremendously far behind. And I was like, what? what are you talking about? Do you know what tremendous means? But it makes sense, but it's weird. So I do need to do that. Also, I've figured out, like, when he's hiding stuff, and you can figure out when a guy sucks or when he thinks a guy is really good. Like, if he's like, oh, yeah, how's this guy handling this? Like, oh, yeah, he's battling. I mean, that dude's not good. it's like, or like, how's this guy picking up this thing? It's like, yeah, his mindset to it is really good. It's like, oh, okay, so he's not good at it at all. like, those are the little things about Pete you can kind of pick up on. That's why when I asked him about what Alex Magoo's struggling with, he was just like, yeah, the whole system, everything. It's like, oh, he thinks Alex was really bad. Like, he didn't even hide that. He was just like, yeah, no, Alex is struggling. Even when he said Alex Magoo was struggling, all the question to get that out of him was just, dang, what was the question? Oh, the question was, what have you seen from those two? Just something generic. And he was like, yeah, Austin's all right, Alex is struggling. I was like, oh. Usually when he, like, wants to, like, coddle the dude, he'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, they're battling. They're right there in there and chomping at the bit. All the cliches. He spouts all those. But with Alex, he was just like, nah, man, dude's struggling. And I was like, what's he struggling with? Everything. Well, okay. So you don't think highly of him. So those are, I think, it's like the Pete Carroll code. That might be what I call it. I will probably do that. I'll probably have to just stay awake on one of my flights, maybe one of my longer ones, like Chicago or something, and put that together. I think it is on the way.
Yes.
He's really cut up about Earl, isn't he?
Oh, the Earl thing. Oh, his tone is really important too. Like when he talks, he'll go, I love when he talks about something funny and that he loves, like Chris Carson or I don't know, just anything about like Russell. Or I love going from that and then just like throwing in a Malik McDowell question or like Cam's neck or Earl's holdout, because he just goes just super, the tone just switches. It's almost like asking him about getting beat up like in middle school, like bringing up an old memory. That really hurts, because it's just like, hey, yeah, Chris Carson, oh, yeah, great, powerful, looks fantastic, you know, he's been running beautifully. Hey, you heard from Earl? Nope, haven't heard from Earl. And there's just like that awkward pause after. It's just like, oh, that, you can tell Pete's really, really upset. Those things get to him. And, yeah, you can tell the Earl thing. He really wants to be like, dude, stop asking me. No, I haven't heard from Earl. Like, he should start every press conference with that. You know, honestly, that would get it out of the way. He tried to do that for his preseason game, to be like, yeah, here's who's going to play, here's how long they're going to play, and here's what we're going to run. He was joking, but it'd be like, no, dude, actually, if you did that, that would make this a lot easier than you want to make it difficult. It feels like if you started every press conference, yeah, day 17, haven't heard from Earl, been no progress in the talks and negotiations. Yeah. We'd be like, all right.
On quickly back on Alex Magoo, you wrote yesterday a really cool piece on him for Your Athletic, which obviously since last time you spoke, you've gone from Seattle Pop PI to The Athletic, which seems to be just signing every journalist in America. How's that been for you? Are you enjoying the new role, new platform?
Yeah, I really like it. I'm writing a lot of stuff. It's like those practice reports I was doing for training camp are like 2,000 words a day. Which was, yeah, no, that's a lot. But it does feel like every day I wake up and we've signed someone new. This must be playing for the Warriors feels like. You just like wake up, you're just golfing or playing ball, playing video games. Like, oh, we signed Kevin Durant. Word? That's cool. Like, I think I was thinking that when we got, we just got someone really big to cover the NBA. I can't think of his name right now, but he's really good. I can't pronounce his name, but I know it. He used to work at Yahoo. That guy.
Watch.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't get Watch. I will remember that.
Jay Glazer just signed as well, didn't he?
Yeah, we just got Jay. That was another one. Dang, that's gonna bug me not knowing the NBA guy's name. I need to look that up. Somewhat an S, I think.
So if the Athletics, the Warriors, who are you on the Warriors?
That's a good question, because I mean I'm still pretty like small fry. Compared to everyone else, right? Like, I'm just the Seahawks. I'm only 26 as well, right? I would probably contend that I'm one of the younger people on the whole staff nationwide. I would have to check that. Looks like the guy who covers Florida State looks to be pretty young as well. Also, looks like we got a young dude up helping out with Celtics. But, yeah, I'm pretty young, too. But I think, yeah, we're signing. Yeah, we got Bruce Feldman on the college stuff. That's another one. Yeah, we got some pretty – we're doing all right. So that's – that's good. I like the time I get to work on bigger stuff. or just like the pressure, not having the daily pressure of just like, we got column inches in the newspaper to fill or things like that. Like if I text Steve and just say, hey, this is boring practice, nothing today. Or like today was a walkthrough, so I didn't write anything today. Right. Like the freedom to do days like that is very important. And it just allows me to, you know, have more time to like work on stuff, or just like, hey, if he's like, hey, how's that one story going? It's like, I need more time. I need this source, or I wrote it one way, but it sucks. So let me give me a little bit more time to work on this. And we just have unlimited space, it feels like, which is really, really, really cool. So like, I think I did one on Jamal Crawford, and you know, local NBA guy. And I think that was like 5,000 words or something like that on Jamal Crawford. And it turned out really well. Jamal loved it and everything. But like 5,000 word story, you kidding me? That wouldn't fit in a newspaper. That'd be the whole A section of a newspaper. So to have the freedom to do that, that's pretty cool. The subscription stuff, I like it. I like how clean the site looks. I always hate when people are like, I interview them for a big story and they're like, hey, yeah, send me the article when it's done. And I'm like, ah, yeah, all right. Knowing that they have no idea that it's going to charge them like $2.99 or something. So that's unfortunate, but I send it, you know, and hopefully the free trial thing helps too. So it's like, okay, you can just have the free trial to read this one story you want to read. But then if you're like, oh dang, this is dope, they got all this stuff. I think people don't understand that you can, when you subscribe to like the Mariners coverage, you get everything. Right, so if you want to read about the Warriors or the Yankees or the Cowboys, yeah, we have a Cowboys guy. Yeah, the Cowboys, whatever. Patriots, if you want to read just national stuff, hockey, soccer. We have Premier League coverage.
Yeah, my friend just got signed for them.
Yeah, like that.
My friend just got signed for the Atlantic, Athletic.
That's amazing. When I was like, I text one of my friends who's into soccer. I was like, dude, you know we cover the Premier League? He was like, yeah, man, that's huge. It's like, I know, I just didn't think we would do that. It's crazy. We have a bunch of cities in Canada that we service. So, yeah, I think we need to, if I'm just going to say what we should market better, that like you get everything if you just like commit to the city that you live in or something like that, or where you're from. Like that's really, really huge. Like my roommate, he's a huge Mariners fan, and not huge Mariners fan, but like he's a huge Seahawks fan, cares about like Seattle sports, but he's also, you know, diehard Yankees, right? So it's like, oh yeah, dude, no, you get the Yankee stuff too. It's like, oh, he loves golf. We got golf coverage. You know, like we got everything. We're covering pretty much everything. So I think that's something we should get out more, that like you don't, if you like my stuff or if you just think it's cool, yeah, sign up for me, but I mean, sign up for 5% of me and also get all of our dope Warriors coverage, or NBA, all of our NBA stuff is great, you know, like our Lakers guys just hit the jackpot. Right, like they just got LeBron James, like our Lakers stuff is going to be super dope. Like I think that's something that's probably my favorite part about it, is like getting everything, and it's like super, super dope stuff. We got a good mix of like long form stuff that you would get from like ESPN Magazine or Sports Illustrated, but then we just have like daily stuff from like people like me, or like our guy who does the Huskies, or you know, our guy doing the Bears or whatever. We got guys churning out daily stuff, and then we got people like Jason Jenks crafting super dope long stuff that he has coming. Like I love that part of it.
Is it Shams Charania, the new NBA guy?
Him, that's the NBA guy we got. Like, that's a big get. You know how plugged in that guy is? That's crazy. There's like some heavy hitters. And NBA is like, in the NFL, there's some clear heavy hitters, right? There's Rappaport and Schefter on our side. And then over there, there's Woj. And then there's him. And then there's, you know, my man, Windhorst, Rhonda Shelburne, Stephen A. Like, there's only a few, right? And we're getting them. Like, good for us. Yes, him. I could not remember his name. Yeah, that dude's money. Like, I woke up, I was like, we got him?
I did a very quick Twitter search, and it came up Trumps. That was a very lucky Twitter search.
I signed up as soon as the Seattle branch was announced, or should be yourself and Stephen Curran and Jason Jakes and everyone else. If anyone doesn't, it is well worth the money. It is, the app is also probably the best sport related app that I've ever had. It's so easy, so clean to use as well. So yeah, very much worth the money. On Magoo though, do you see sales in walkie talkies skyrocketing after that in NFL training camps?
It should. Those guys should really. I hope Sherman was really good at this, being aware of like product placement. Like obviously they didn't name a specific product, but like no. he was he was really, really good at that, right? Like, if I'm a... Dang, there was somebody else that just did something where I was like, they should have marketed that. I can't remember who it was, but they said something and I was like, yeah, man, if you're just going to just shout out this product or this company or this thing, you should go get you a deal. Sherm was really aware of that. Russell is too. Russell's got money from so many random people coming in. That dude's got a shaving deal. He's got a shoe deal. He's got a deal with somebody for his clothes, cars, headphones, like that, travel. That dude is everything, man. Like, Alex Magoo was telling me how sometimes he just watches Russell, right? He doesn't even ask him anything. Just watches how he just does life and wants to do that. And I was like, dude, you're right. Russell don't got to pay for anything. Everything is sponsored. And if he wants to go to work, work out, eat, go home, sleep, I think he might have a mattress deal or something like that. Like, I'm pretty sure I saw a video of him, like, jumping on a bed that was, like, sponsored, right? Like, everything a dude does is sponsored. That's absolutely genius. The only time it's not genius is when you're being lazy and giving away gifts based on your sponsorship. That was in that ESPN piece from last year. Like, people didn't like how it's like, dude, you're giving us free airline tickets, but you're sponsored by Alaska. That ain't no gift.
Yeah,
don't give me something you got for free. Come on, man. That's messed up. Like, even last year, he gave all the linemen those long Bose speakers that you put, like, right under your TV. Yeah. It's just,
but
like,
he
okay.
has Bose.
Right. It's like, dude, you're sponsored by Bose. You didn't pay a dime for those, probably. Maybe he did, but I doubt it. Right? Like, come on. You know you got the hookup on those. And you just made someone made a call and you just had 12 of them just brought to the facility. Like, don't be that guy. Like, if you're gonna buy me a gift, like, I understand that it can be silly for rich people to buy other rich people gifts. Like, I get the silliness in that. But if you're going to do it, then all right, man, buy me something. Give me something specific to me. Don't just, like, your sponsorship hooks you up. Like, I'm gonna still listen to the speakers, thanks, but like, those are, I think they're like $300 speakers or maybe even more. But come on, dude, like, that's the only time where you having all those sponsorships ain't that cool. Like, give me an actual gift, dude. Come on.
Yeah, so we've had a few questions. You've covered most of them over the last hour or so. But one you haven't covered is Dave Bailey wants your wild prediction He wants to know your bold prediction for the upcoming season. His is that Ken Norton won't last the season as defensive coordinator.
Oh, wow. That would be really bad. Coordinators get canned through the... I guess Ken just did, right? Actually,
yeah,
I feel like offensive get canned more than defensive during a season.
Yes. Yeah, I get that sense too. Just because everyone feels like they can fix an offense...
Yeah, and it's the bravado of, like, I'll call the plays as the coach and it'll all be fine, and it never is.
Yeah, I feel like also, before they get canned, yeah, the play-calling duties or just the responsibilities get lessened usually more often than the guy gets canned because it's like, all right, yeah, I'm calling the plays now. You're right. Like, that's – and just from the outside, people just feel like they can – it's like, oh, I'll just run it more or I'll just keep throwing it to A.J. Green. You know, like, simple fixes that it's clearly just not that simple. Although with A.J. Green, I do think it is, like, dude – When Andy Dalton throws it to anyone else, it's probably just a bad idea. Like, unless it has Tyler Eifert on the field, throw it to AJ. Don't really care what down it is. Don't care if he's triple covered. He caught a 50-yard ball in triple coverage last year in, like, Thursday Night Football. Throw it to AJ all the time. If I had to have a bold prediction, I actually did a whole podcast about him. I'm not going to recycle one of those, though. I think of something new, mostly because I don't remember the ones I gave. one of them I had actually included them getting to the NFC title game. I don't know if I'll go that far here again, although I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but I do think that must have
Earl Thomas coming back.
Yeah, you know what, I think that might have factored in Earl, so that's probably why I have to back off on that. Because with Earl, yeah, I don't think they're any less talented than any of the other teams in the NFC. I'm running through them in my head. The Eagles are pretty good, but, you know, the Rams are good. Part of that is because I'm not super high on the Rams, that like everyone else is. I don't think the NFL is like the NBA, and that you just signed a bunch of dudes, everyone knows their name, and it just makes your team better. Mm-hmm. It's really not like that. I mean, How did we all not learn that from that Eagles team a few years ago that called themselves like a super team or something? They had like Vince Young. I can't remember the full team. I think I had Deshaun Jackson. I can't remember. The team was really good. They had like LeSean McCoy, Deshaun Jackson, Michael Vick, I think. And they were like, oh, yeah, it's like a super team. And then they sucked. Because signing names in football isn't just always the way to go. Sometimes it's just locking up that like a Bradley McDougal that can make all the difference, or a Justin Coleman, you know, or little things like that. I don't always think it's the big names. So I think they'll win the division. Is that bold?
Ooh, that is bold.
Yeah, that is bold. If you listen to our podcast about 3 weeks ago, that is bold. We trudged through trying to get positive vibes going, and it didn't really work.
Hey, well, here, I can sell you on it real quick. One, okay. you can sell. That's kind of my sell on the Rams, is that, you know, talent, just big names alone won't really do it. Also, we don't know when Aaron Donald will show up to work. That's a big part of that. Also, they split with the Rams last year. And Pete, I don't really like using last year actually too much, but in terms of division rivalries, it's worth it because it's teams you play a lot. I think they can split with anyone in division, and splitting with anyone is important enough. I don't think the Cardinals will be any good. I haven't bought the Jimmy G hype yet. I got to see it. I really do got to see it. I didn't really watch any of the Jimmy G games from last year, so that's part of it. But you can easily see the Niners like not lighting it up on offense or being that good on defense, to be honest. They don't have anything that really scares me. The D-line could be good, I guess. And then the Rams, it's a little bit of regression, I would think, just because they kind of caught everyone off guard a little bit. Like that's definitely something. It shouldn't happen, right? There's 16 games, and you spend a week watching every team. No one should catch you off guard, but if you think about it. But that does happen, right? Like, it's like, oh, wow, actually the Eagles are really good. Like, oh, they won 9 straight. It's like, how did that happen? Or like, oh, wow, the Rams' offense is super potent. I don't think that's going to catch anyone off guard. I think injuries factor in anything. I don't want to predict which guys will get hurt, but I feel like the Rams got through pretty clean last year. And the Seahawks were about as bad as anyone, other than like maybe Houston and Washington had some really bad injuries last year. Obviously the Packers lost their QB too, but so you'd have to imagine that, you know, they regressed to the mean, I guess, in that regard too, in terms of keeping guys healthy. So there's just a lot of factors. Also, they still have the best, if they have one of the best players in the division at the most important position. Like Russell, I think, is by far the best quarterback in the division, and it's not close. Like, not even a little bit, right? They have still one of the best pass rushers, I think, in the division. I think it's Aaron, and then it's probably, that's a good question. I'm not sure who it is after Aaron, but Frank's right there, you know. I think they have the best linebacker duo in the league, so let alone the division. So I think there's just so much that can just work in their favor also, just like with what their scheme. I think Shaq is going to be as good as any corner in the division. You know, this includes Tlaib. This includes Marcus Peters, who I think is one of the best corners, if not the best, in the league. Like, I really think it's like Jalen and Marcus Peters. Mm-hmm. I think Marcus Peters is like, demeanor and just like when he opens his mouth, it's not as like lovable as it is with some of these other guys. Like corners are like that Jalen Ramsey piece went over. It's like, oh wow, this is great. Jalen Ramsey just ran his mouth. But like with Marcus Peters, it's not like the same thing because he doesn't appear to be as insightful. But like, dude, you throw on him and it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I think Shaq will be as good as those guys in that regard. And I think the Seahawks managed to be successful last year, losing Cam and Richard. And Cliff, and a bum knee Mike B, and no run game, like at all, like none, like zero, and they won 9 games. Oh, also a kicker who just kept pushing it left, right? So I think there's just so many factors, and just like even if they get hit with the injury bug again, just being able to run the ball and having Russell Wilson and an experienced team. Right. They're not one of these teams that's just relying on a bunch of youth like the Rams. Right? Like Bobby's been here, done that. Doug's been here, done that. Dwayne. You know, even a guy like Byron, you know, dude's won Super Bowl. Like he seems like the one guy who's done a lot that no one just cares about at all. Like Byron's on a Super Bowl team. Like the Super Bowl, man.
He could have been MVP of that Super Bowl.
He could have.
Yeah, it was really good. You know, Jeremy Lane was another dude last year. It's like, you guys remember he picked off Tom Brady in the Super Bowl? You guys were ready to ship him off to Houston for nothing. Like, really good. So I think they have enough guys who have been there, done that. It's not that it's just they're old, right? Not a bunch of Brandons who have been there, done that just because they've been in the league a lot. Not to, you know, I call it Brandon old. That's fine. I'll live with that. But, you know, they have guys who have been there, done that in every situation. Right? They almost won that Panthers game down 31-0 on the road. Yeah. Right, like that was impressive. Like to have that comeback, those Green Bay comebacks. I think there's just people forget, like even when they have that dominant runs, that there were just little moments that won them so many games, and they just didn't blow everyone out. Right, they had a couple games where they had 50-point, you know, performances, but they weren't just wrecking everyone, even with the Legion of Boom and all those teams. Right, they were down 21-0 to like a Mike Glennon led Tampa Bay team at home, I want to say.
Yeah,
maybe he wasn't the quarterback, but
no, he was tore us up. I think he scored on a jump pass.
No, that was like, Mike James who did that.
Oh, the running back. Yeah, like, yeah. They were down 21-0 to them at home, so they had some really sketchy games and moments and managed to pull it out. Like, that's why guys like John Ryan and Jermaine Kearse and, you know, Earl and those guys will live forever in the city, because it's just those one play, you know, that one punch out by Cam Newton to beat Detroit that year. Mm-hmm. Like, think of all those little the Fail Mary, you know, like those little moments. They just didn't happen last year, and maybe they won't happen this year, but they can happen any year. Like, Blair Walsh makes that kick against Atlanta, maybe, you know, It works, right? There's just so many moments that can little one possession things that can split a game. Like, Jimmy Graham drops that pass against Houston, they maybe lose that game, but they end up winning it, right? If Cooper Kupp catches that ball from Jared Goff in week like 5 last year, they lose at LA, right? Like, there's, you know, Byron Maxwell doesn't punch that ball out against Dez Bryant against the Cowboys, maybe they lose that game, right? But they go on and win that. Blair Walsh makes that kick against Arizona last year, they finish a 10-win team that doesn't make the playoffs instead of a 9-win team. It's a big difference in a lot of people's eyes. So there's just so many little things that can happen that it's so hard for me to be down on a team, just like, unless it's like the Browns or the Giants or something like that, unless they're just completely inept at quarterback, is usually when I'm down on teams. When you have a competent quarterback who can be consistent, then I'll always believe that you can win your division and make the playoffs, right? Unless you're in the NFC East or AFC East. Other than, like, unless you're the Browns or your quarterback is Eli, your team has a shot, probably. Like, I feel bad for Giants fans because Eli's not good. But yeah, other than that, like, like, he's bad. He's real bad. They keep trotting him out for, like, nostalgia's sake, and they should stop. But unless you're them, I think, or maybe Tampa, Jameis is really inconsistent. I like Jameis, but he's super inconsistent. As long as you had a consistent quarterback and veterans who've been there, done that, and, you know, just talent scattered around, yeah, you can win your division. Again, unless you're in the AFC East, because the Patriots are just bullies. Other than that, yeah, anyone can win a division. Don't give up on the Seahawks just yet. No one wins the Super Bowl in August, right? Like, there's a reason they play the games.
I'm fired up now.
Yeah.
I think
sold on, yeah, you sold, I think I was bought, a, yeah, I bought a scene
you bought us back to life.
Yeah, yeah. Right, moving on. Now time for Adam's favourite part of every podcast. It's time for Get in the Bin.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Right, so yeah, this week there are plenty, and obviously the obvious candidate is always there every week. I'm going to kick off this week in case Adam nicks mine. I'm going to go, Michael spoke earlier about how the Seahawks keeping quiet because there could be litigation. Someone didn't keep quiet when there is litigation going on was John Elway, who got his calendar and dates horrendously wrong. And if anything's going to seal Kaepernick's justified case against the NFL, it was that. So yeah, John Elway and the Denver Broncos get in the bin. Adam?
Yeah, that's a good shout. I'm actually going to go on a different tack to normal. I mean, obviously Hugh Jackson is always in my bin. But I'm going to go with the entire like NFL media fantasy football guru group, because I'm just getting fed up of like getting so excited about football season, which is really exciting and everyone has a fantasy team or whatever, but like it's just so boring that all they can talk about is who's going to have more catches, like the eighth string receiver for them or the ninth string receiver for the other team. Like it's just boring. Like just watch the actual football. No one really cares about Michael Fabiano, what he thinks about like Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders. Like, it's just boring. Like, can't we just watch the game and actually get on with it? And that NFL fantasy football inadvertent commas gurus, you can get in the bin. So that's the vibe, Michael. So let's see what you got.
Okay. Okay. My first thought was Trump, just because whenever about.
Done. He's got a timeshare in the bin. Don't worry about that.
Yeah. Okay. Then I was like, okay, he's probably been in the bin, right? He has to.
Yeah.
Then on like the same note, my second thought was Jerry Jones. Those are my top two. I'm trying to think of anything that just happened on Hard Knocks. It's tough because
Greg Williams is always a good guy to put in there.
Okay,
he's an idiot.
I was gonna Google this, right? That's the dude from the Bounty Gate or whatever, right?
Yeah,
same dude. Okay, cool.
And the Jeff Fisher Rams jobs? Teams.
Serious question: how does he keep getting jobs? What? What are you? He's got a good agent too. My good, or he's built some great relationships in the league that just cannot be destroyed. That dude keeps. I was wondering that. I was gonna tweet that, but I didn't want to look stupid. Right? I wasn't sure if that was him. I should have just googled it. The fact that he keeps getting jobs is.
He was with Fisher at the Rams as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the bounty. Yeah. Oh, that's bad too. anyone on the Jeff Fisher stuff keeps getting drafts or keeps getting jobs is also impressive. I think I'm gonna roll with Pete Carroll. In terms of kind of on the John Elway thing, but it's just more of their backup quarterback situation. Because Pete loves to say always compete, and then he trots out Alex and Austin right every week. Every practice, and it's just like, dude, do you really mean always compete? Because you don't have anyone competing with Russell, like, at all. Like, not even a little bit. The drop-off from QB1 to QB2 and 3 is just, like, unbelievably just huge. it is unfair, right? And then the Chargers game, you can really see it, right? Because clearly there was a drop-off from Phillip Rivers to Geno and Cardale Jones, but I was sitting there like, how do the Chargers have two decent backups?
Yeah, they look capable NFL players just.
Right, right. Like, yeah, Cardale looked like Alex looked like it for a drive. That was a really great drive by Alex. The best of any backup QB that the Seahawks have had. But, whoa, Cardale looked great. Like, what? How did they get two when the Seahawks can barely find one, right? He'll bring in, he's called Kaepernick twice and whiffed. They went and called Josh Johnson. Like, dude, come on, stop, please stop, stop saying always compete, and you want someone to push Russell. No, you don't. Stop lying. So that's why I want Pete in there, because every preseason game and every practice, it's just like you're lying. You're lying to us and you're lying to yourself, and you look really bad. Like, that's embarrassing for you to go out there. Remember how bad the backups were in that first preseason game? They were awful, both of them. Neither one of them was good, right? And meanwhile, it's just I think I tweeted during the Chargers game. I was like, you know what the Seahawks could use is someone with mobility. I didn't mean that to be like a hint at Kaepernick, although it came across that way.
Yeah.
I really just was like, yeah, the backup old line just isn't that great. So they need someone who can run for their life. Mm-hmm. Russ, their starter can do it. Why wouldn't you get a backup that can do it? Right? Duh. That makes sense to me. So, yeah, that's why I want Pete in there. It's like, dude, get out of here with this always compete, pretending it applies to Russell. You don't want anyone to compete with Russell. You love Russell. So don't do that. That's why I want Pete in there.
Nice.
I mean, someone else who was quite close to me, but obviously all the stuff happened yesterday. What's your take on Urban Meyer, Ohio State? nonsense yesterday.
See, that was I was going to throw Ohio State the whole athletic department in there. I didn't know if I could do that. That would that was, oh, I thought it was NFL. Yeah, that would be my top choice then. Yeah, yeah. No, Ohio State just kind of. Because it would start with Urban and then the whole, you know, organization. But then it goes up to just college football in general, right? Like, yeah. I think we have a really great column on The Athletic. I forget her name because I don't know her. Nicole, maybe? She wrote it. Well, I don't want to mess her name up. But she wrote the column. And
she just eviscerates them in that last couple of paragraphs, didn't she?
Yes, yes. Yeah. She says something like, her name is Nicole. What has Urban Meyer learned about domestic violence? And the answer is zero or nothing, right? And it's not that Urban Meyer is stupid. All the lines about like his memory loss and the medication stuff and just like all the stuff in the report, like, oh yeah, you know, he tried to delete his text when the reports came out. That was concerning, but we didn't find any foul play. Like, you guys are idiots. But for like, that was concerning. All that stuff is bad in the report, but like I liked her last paragraph there because it gets to the root of it. And I could even take it a step further in that he didn't learn anything in this about domestic violence because he's not operating in a system that requires him to, right? Like there's no learning to be had here because there is no requirement to learn. There's just like, it's damage control for damage control's sake, right? For the sake of financial gain, right? Basically. It's just like, or just the absence of financial loss, I guess. That's what college sports is. That's what, I mean, you see it in the entertainment industry now with like the Me Too stuff. And you see it in the NFL too with domestic violence. You know what? Actually, I was at a radio station this morning. It was at KJR looking at old newspaper clippings that they had up on the wall. And one of them was when the Mariners won the AL West in like 1995. And it was the same day that OJ was found not guilty. And then like it was an interesting front page to say the least, but on the side of the page, it said one of the teasers was, OJ Simpson's case sheds light on athletes and domestic violence. And I was like, oh my God, nothing has changed in 23 years. Right? Like we didn't even get domestic violence right after Ray Rice, you know, as big of a deal that was, we didn't get it right. And we still haven't gotten it right. And the root of it is how our feelings toward women as men in general. But that's why the Ohio State thing is so disappointing, because whether it's Baylor or Ohio State or, you know, or I'm missing a really big one. Who was the other one? Oh, Penn State. Whether it's, you know, those schools, the guys in charge never learn anything. They never, like, have some enlightenment in terms of, you know, a newfound morality. They just do whatever to save their butt, right? Because that's the system is designed so that you just do whatever you have to do to save your butt. And that is the problem here. And we need to address that. And I think Nicole's column, especially that end part, did a really good job there. Because, like, Urban didn't learn anything. And he didn't learn anything. And you can tell he didn't learn anything. And take it a step further, he didn't learn anything because he doesn't have to, right? Ohio State doesn't care whether he learns anything. We got to start caring. They don't care whether Urban Meyer learned anything about domestic violence. Can he get us to the CFP? That's what anyone cares about, right? We don't care. Ray Rice would still be in the league if he was averaging 5 yards a carry. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I swear by that. I would almost guarantee he'd be in the league if he was averaging 5 yards a carry at the time that he hit his fiance.
I mean, they had Junior Gallette in for a visit 2 days ago, and he's got his domestic violence issues, and that John Schneider said he would resign if they ever signed a guy with domestic violence issues. So even then, like, there's no consistency there at all.
Right. Yeah. And we're just not, there's no consistency, and we really just don't care. I think people need to stop pretending.
That's it. They just don't care. It'd be easier to take if they just said, we don't care as long as they can make us win. Cause that's basically what's going on when they're just lying about it.
Right. Like, I would appreciate that. I would appreciate the transparency. I don't know if I would respect it, but I would appreciate
it. Yeah. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Like, I would appreciate you saying, look, if the Seahawks were like, look, we know Frank either did this or he didn't. We asked him, we think he's a good pass rusher, so we drafted him. Any questions? You know, like, that would be way better than just like, you know, life change, whatever, you know, we've added the situation. No, you didn't. Like, don't lie to us and be inconsistent. I think they brought in Junior Gallette as a favor to the agent, I believe. But
okay.
that's still, right? Forget that favor. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, man. Women matter more than your favor. Mm-hmm. That would have been my response to that if they'd have publicly said that. Women matter more than your favor. And I think until we start saying that women matter more than winning or anything else, then we'll get to the root of some of these issues. Because right now, yeah, it's just if teams really should just come out and say, yeah, we know he beat his wife or whatever, but, you know, he's got an arm and, you know, we need a quarterback. So we're signing him. Deal with it. Then
yeah, man.
We'd be able to make way more progress in that regard than we are now with teams trying to just like, I mean, Urban Meyer has a thing that says, you know, respect women. Dude, what do you know about that? Not a damn thing. Don't lie to us. So yeah, Urban's on my, get him in the bin and keep him there.
Yeah.
Forever.
He certainly will be. As we said, we keep mentioning you have moved on to the Athletic. One part of that seems to be you'll be doing the road games, which includes the game in 7 weeks in our Adams back garden. That you're heading over to London for the game against the Raiders.
Oh yeah, that's gonna 9-hour flight. I'm not excited about that, but I am excited about the travel. Like I was like giddy like a kid on Christmas morning, you know, to be there at that Chargers game, and like it was. Greg was like, man, I'm glad that you're like excited about this, because you know Greg's like, ah, man, travel. He's been doing this for so long. The travel is just another weekend he's away from his kids, right? Which I get. Mm-hmm. Perspective is important. But like he was like, you know, it's good to see someone who's excited to be here, right? Because that like reminds me why I still do this, right? Because it is like a big deal, and like this is a cool thing. So that part I'm excited about. I'm not excited about all these planes because it's just so I can't get used to the takeoff. I took some muscle relaxers to try to relax on the plane. I took too many on accident. So I was throwing up all Saturday. I couldn't keep any food down. I fell asleep in my lift that I took to the game. And the driver had to wake me. He probably thought I was hungover. He was like, yeah, dude, we're here. I'm like, oh, where's here? I woke up like, where we're at? I was like, oh, there's people. Oh, I'm going to just follow them. So like I'm going to figure out new ways to entertain myself on these flights, or at least knock myself out. But that part of it kind of stinks. But the exclusivity of being on the road, just guys just seeing you on the road, just kind of building those relationships. Like you can really, depending on the game, you can catch a guy at his highest and his lowest. Mm-hmm. And on those road trips, right? Like I really wish I was there for the Jacksonville game. I really wish I was there for one other road game. Oh, Dallas. Wish I was there for the come get me thing. Just to be selfishly, that would just seem really fun to be around, because it was like, oh, this is great. Earl walked in there full uniform and just like, hey, can I play for you? What? Oh my god, that would get you fired anywhere else, man. Full uniform still? What? So I do like that part of it, just because I'm gonna be around, and I'll just be one of those guys that they recognize to be always around, and I can just sit there and just like really talk to whoever. Whenever, whether that's, you know, locker room, right? It was just like, hey, random player, I'm going to spend a day with you in London. You want to write about it? You down? Cool, man. Mm-hmm. Let's go explore the city together. Like, those type of things. Now, with that said, I won't be in Minnesota tomorrow just because we didn't plan it out that way. And also, preseason's kind of blah. But that part of it I do really like, because at home games, there really is just a scrum in the home locker room. You're never going to get an exclusive unless you just sit around for an hour, wait for everyone to shower and try to catch a guy at the end, or you talk to someone no one wants to talk to. But chances are, if there's someone no one wants to talk to, it's because that person is that significant. So, like, I didn't write that much about Shaquem after the first preseason games because the line for his locker looked like, you know, the line for a bathroom in a nightclub. Like, it was just ridiculous. So I didn't even talk to him. You know, I probably should have, but, you know, it's times like that. You know, maybe if I wanted him tomorrow after the Minnesota game, it'd be a little easier to get, you know, to get that access. You know, things, he's going to be a spectacle all year, but, you know, it's just make it a little bit easier. So maybe it's me and two other people at his locker instead of 15 and six huge cameras, you know, at every game. So that part of it, I'm really, really looking forward to, because at the Athletic, we're really selling exclusivity. So like I need to be able to deliver, and I can't do that from my couch. So I don't know what I'm going to write tomorrow now that I think about it. But every other game, like that's the way to do it. You know, to be, you know, in those tiny little locker rooms, or being able to sit next to DJ Fluker after he snaps his finger out of place. It's like, hey, DJ, how's your finger? Oh, yeah, it's fine, dude. Don't worry about it. Or, you know, Tyler told me after the game the last Saturday, I was like, what's up? How's your foot? He's like, yeah, no, I'm good. I could play today. But, you know, it's preseason. You know, so it's like, oh, okay, we really don't have to worry about Tyler then. You know, we're off-the-record convos with Doug about his knee. You know, just having those, I don't report it all the time, just having it in the back of my head. So when I do something like this or a radio show or my own podcast, I'm really informed, more informed than anyone else. So, and that's really important in my line of work, especially when you got like, well, I'm already never going to beat guys like Rappaport or Schefter, right? So I need another in. This is my in.
Yes. So yeah, obviously we've both told you on Twitter separately and collectively that when you are in London, you are invited to our big Saturday night party if time and your schedule allows. So it would be awesome to see. Also, maybe we could do a in-person pod bit as well if you have the time.
I mean, you guys would be my not liaisons or whatever, but like, what's the people at the hotel who tell you where stuff is?
Concierge.
Yep, boom, that.
I live 10 minutes from Wembley Stadium, so I'm sure we can sort something out.
Oh yeah, because I'm going to be out there. I think my roommate's actually going to come. So that's really cool. It's like one of my best friends. So you're going to be out there with me. I'll be there for a week.
Sweet.
I'm going to do some work too. But like, yeah man, I want to hang out. I want to learn stuff. I want to meet people. I want to, you know, explore as safely as possible.
There's probably a good long form article out there on the us idiots that stay up till 5 a.m. watching the primetime games.
No, they're not idiots, but yeah, no, they're really like when the German dudes came to like practice, like that was in the back of my head. I was like, wow, man, like you guys make the dedication to watch those games from over there. My friend is a huge Mariners fan, just moved to Taiwan, you know, and he's up to watch, you know, their day games. Their day games here are like 5 a.m. for him or so. I don't know, 15 hours in Taiwan. So. Like, that's some dedication, and to have, like, a whole bunch of people with that dedication, like, people that don't even really know each other, who are just like, yeah, we just all love the Seahawks. Like, yeah, there's definitely a story there. Yeah, you guys are going to be one of my stories. And that's one of those exclusives I have.
Yeah, right.
Well, I live about 70, 80 kilometers away from London, so I'll be down there on the Wednesday. Adam said he's all there all week. Also, one thing on the Germans, the guy who's a massive driving force behind our UK group, exploding, he died a few years ago, he was the guy who helped start up the German fan group, so that's a pretty cool correlation with this. And the guy who's, I think he's still the top guy in the Germans, Seahawkers. We went the last time the Seahawks played the Raiders, we were in King Street with him, Adam Max.
Yeah, we were there. We were at the Raiders home game 4 years ago. It's where we first met, Stu.
Yeah, it is.
That's where Stu and I first met.
Yeah.
It's been
dark days ever since.
Dark days, yeah. But also, sorry.
Go ahead. No, I'm definitely excited to get out there. I went to Toronto a few years ago, so that's the only time out of the country. So, but like, yeah, that's gonna be cool. Like, just the little things you don't even think about when you just said kilometers. And I was like, wait, what? Oh, damn, it is different over there. Like, I'm gonna have to. Learn stuff like that. It just everything. Like it's gonna be a shock. It's gonna take me a few days to get used to it. But then I'll just have like that memory forever. It's like, oh, remember that time I went to London and work paid for it? Like, I'm never gonna forget that. And one of my best friends gets to come with me. Like that's super cool. Like that's a dream in every way. Like they should. Seahawks should do something like this every year and just make it some cool location. And I got to find ways to put myself to sleep that don't tear up my stomach. Like, I threw up so bad right before the game.
I'll give you some tips. We do it every year, so we'll give you some tips.
Yeah, I have some other stuff. Someone gave me some Xanax, I think. I think I'll do that, but yeah.
Like, alcohol is always good.
Yeah. The problem with alcohol, for me, I have a very small bladder. So
okay.
If I was to just get drunk on the flight, yeah, sure, I wouldn't care about the landing, the takeoff, or if the plane just went down, right? I wouldn't care. But I would have to use the bathroom every 10 minutes, and that just would be wildly inconvenient on a flight. So that eventually, yeah, I would pass out and be just out the whole flight. But for like an hour or two, I would be up and jittery and having to go to the bathroom. So that's why I can't do alcohol.
Okay, that's out.
But yeah, I think I'm a. I think when I go to Denver, I for some reason couldn't find a straight flight there, so I have a layover in San Fran, which is stupid, but I have it, so that's like 6 hours of travel. I think I might try some Xanax or something there, or melatonin or something somebody told me to try. I'll try some of that, and I'll make sure I eat before I do it. I didn't eat when I took the muscle relaxers. That was part of the problem. So, yeah, as soon as I ate some Roscoe's chicken and waffles, the lady and my server was like, dude, are you all right? Because I'm just sitting there looking like I'm going to throw this up right here on the table, and everyone's going to see it. And every time I went to the bathroom, I just couldn't throw up. And then as soon as I left, threw up, got to the hotel, threw up. Oh, it was awful. So yeah, I've learned already. I'm learning on the go with this travel stuff. I also learned you don't get any sleep. So everything that I write and tweet when on the road, no, that is coming off of no sleep and lots of caffeine.
So there is one thing we are doing, that Saturday night party all through the week at London, which may have seen, but obviously as a former Coug may be of interest to you. Tyler Hilinski and Hilinski's Hope, we are. Oh, a massive package is on the way to my house. I've pre-warned the postman that it's coming, and we will be raising money via selling auction and raffling off Hilinski Hope t-shirts, decals, hoodies, and maybe a couple of baseball caps as well. All money going to the Hilinski Hope Foundation, which I'm sure Mike is, as a former Cougar, can understand how big and how such a great cause that is for something that was so tragic that happened 7-8 months ago.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's something I think I'd seen that earlier. It happened when something else was going on, so I didn't give as much attention as I should have. But yeah, that's something. Yeah, I'll probably be participating in that for sure. Because I'm even if I wasn't a Cougar, right, I'm still a human being.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean we're all UW fans, and you know, again, it transcends sport.
Absolutely. Yeah, I that's something I'll definitely be part to. That might be another one of the stories, to be honest, because that's worth some national, international attention, I guess. In that regard, because yeah, the Tyler thing, like you said, transcends sports. There's a Tyler in a random middle school right now who doesn't play sports, but you know, is feeling whatever Tyler was feeling. There's a Tyler in the NFL. You know, there's a Tyler in the stands at the Seahawks games. Whatever, you know, there's a Tyler among all of us, because you know, we just need people to know that there are people that care for them. And the more light that's set on the situation, the better it'll get. So absolutely, that's a beautiful thing. That was your guys' idea. That's a beautiful idea.
Yeah.
That's A1. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, Stuart deserves a lot of credit for that. Is his brainchild, and he's done a brilliant job with it, I have to say.
Yeah. I'm not very good at taking praise, but thank you very much. Well, also with Tyler, the Cougars play their first game in 9 or 10 days. I mean, they have to do the missing man formation, don't they? Like Nebraska did last year.
Yeah, you would think, but I get the sense that Leach wouldn't want to do that.
Yeah.
I think that's giving Leach just more credit than he would deserve for being a good guy. And I have no problem being recorded saying Leach is not a good dude. And the examples are not even just like some insider stuff that I have. I have some of those too, but like publicly, it was just like that Obama thing was awful.
Yeah.
Speaking at the Trump rally he did in like July 2016 in Spokane was awful. The way he handles injuries is awful. Because he just has no regard. Like he prioritizes his secrecy over, you know, the thoughts of the families. Like we had a year where Luke Falk, you know, he was carried off on a stretcher, you know, in like the first half, and then at the start of his second half interview. Or maybe it was after the game we won, and then the sideline reporter was like, hey, you know, status on Luke Falk. He's like, oh, he's fine. They rested him in the second half. It's like, you think his mom wanted to hear that you rested her son who was on a stretcher? It's like, come on. Like, you could at least say you hope he's all right. My goodness. Like, that's a jerk.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I understand, you know, you college football coaches are all like, oh, secrecy, when all of you guys are copycats, as is. But that comes to a level you just have to be a human being and understand that when a mom just watched her son, whether she was at the game or not, just watch your son get carted off on a stretcher, you know, right? That's somebody's best friend and brother and son. Like, you need to take those things into consideration when you just – because also it just makes the kid look – we don't know what to think about the kid, right? It makes it seem like the kid's not out there because the kid's not tough enough or something, right? Like, last year we lost our middle linebacker for the year. I think he broke his foot, and Leach was like, yeah, expect him out there this week. It's like, nah, man. Don't make it seem like the kid can't play through something. His foot is broke. Say you hope he gets better. He has a broke foot and move on. Don't like, come on, man. That's, and then Luke ended up having a really bad brain injury, I think, after that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, against Colorado, I think it was. Like, come on, don't. Dude's not a good dude. So I don't know if we'll they'll probably do something every game, but I don't want to anticipate Leach being a good guy and handling it. Because he's not a good dude.
But I think the family are there for the home opener, aren't they? The Helsinki family are in Pullman for the home opener.
Ooh, probably. I don't know when our home opener is. I've really been – Leach has kind of turned me off of just like – like, I'm going to watch every Saturday. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm going to watch every game, you know, and things like that. And you know, and drink Fireball with my friends and all that. But it's still just like, nah, I don't like – not to Leach's credit, but I guess to be fair to Leach, they didn't hire him to be a good guy, I guess. They hired him to go win, which is what I want him to do as well. If he's a good guy in the process, that's great. But college football just doesn't put you in a position to also be a good dude and then also go win, because he feels like you got to do all these slimy things and backdoor deals to win. You get these SEC coaches who wave these Bibles, you know, in our faces, and then they're out here buying escorts, you know. I think it was the Ole Miss coach, super Bible waver. He's out here dialing escort service. Like, come on, dude, get away from me with that. You know, don't try to lie to me. So, yeah, I'm a little turned off. I hope we win 10 games and go to the Rose Bowl or whatever, but, like, if we go to the Rose Bowl and win a bunch of games and someone takes Leach, I won't be like, oh, that sucks. I'll be like, well, you know, whatever. We lost this dude who was just like a jerk. And like, and you can tell he's doing it without care of how it's coming across, because he has no problem being all fun and lovey if you ask him some dating advice or what color the bridesmaid should wear at your upcoming wedding. You ask him that little quirky, dorky stuff, and he has all these long answers, and he'll just opine about whether – you know, chickens or dinosaurs. And he'll just go on for like 10 minutes about something stupid like that. Ask him about something, you know, serious about, you know, like a player's health, which is more serious than whether chickens or dinosaurs, or whether you need to take a girl somewhere where she'll stuff her face on a first date. Then he's all grumpy and you know, in that weird tone he talks in. So go Cougs, but man, I don't like Mike. And I have no problem saying that. And I have so many legitimate reasons to not like him either. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like just because he said something mean to me once. He actually never has. But the Trump rally was a bad look, and the Obama thing, and his actions after. He's just so unapologetic. It's like, yeah, I do what I want. You know, I'm not acting in the light of the university. Like, dude, you're the most famous person at the school. Everything you do reflects us, whether you're wearing a three-piece suit or a Coug beanie. Dummy. Oh, sorry. I went on a rant about Leach.
It's okay. Love it.
So, I think that's everything. Adam?
2 hours I'm spent. I got to go to bed.
So massive thanks, Michael, yet again. Where can people catch you? How can people sign up, which they all should do, for The Athletic?
Sure.
You can always just go to theathletic.com. But also, if you follow me on Twitter or at Mike Dugar, MikeDugar, anytime I post a story, if you just click on it, it'll tell you how to get the free trial, how to get a discount, all that. Just in any story, or not even just my story. So if you don't have a subscription, it's any story, right? So you go to The Athletic, click on anything. It'll be like, oh, here's how you sign up. Here's how you get a free trial. Here's how you get a discount. Like, we just launched our national NFL thing. So I'm pretty sure if you click on anything there, we're offering a special. We'll probably have like an – whatever holiday is coming up over here, we're going to have a special for that. Labor Day. Probably have a Labor Day weekend special or something. Like, any of that on The Athletic. On my Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast is always at the top of my Twitter as well, but you can also just go to iTunes or Seahawks Man-to-Man. It's always there. I don't call people idiots that much, as much as I did just now with you guys. I realize it's called a lot of people idiots, but a lot of people
No one listens to this show, Mike. Don't worry about it. You don't have to worry about that.
No, the people I called idiots, I'm pretty confident in it. Like Mike Leach, you know, Urban Meyer, Ohio State, you know, Pete Carroll with the always compete thing. Like I'm very Jerry Jones. These are all not smart people, and I would tell that to their face over dinner, coffee, drinks, whatever. I would say you are not smart. Here's why. Right? So it's fine, but I don't do that as much as in the podcast. I don't think, at least, just because I have to see these dudes every day, and I'm just not gonna be calling like Doug Baldwin an idiot, and then being alone with him in the locker room because I don't want to get punched in the face. So there's that. So, yeah, you can check all that out there.
Yeah, as I keep saying, definitely if you haven't already, do sign up for The Athletic and read all Michael and everyone else who's now every journalist in America, as I said, on that website and on that platform. You can catch us, thepossessionpodcast.podbean.com. It's also still on iTunes. Facebook group is UK Seattle Seahawks fans. Twitter is at Seahawkers UK. Personal ones are at Stu_Court and at Adam D. Nathan. We may be back next week. Enjoy wherever you watch or whatever time of the day or night on Saturday you watch the Seahawks' third preseason game, which apparently the starters are going to play into the second half, which seems playing with fire stupid. A little bit. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast. And to wrap up, to sign us off this week would have been, well, when we start this podcast today, would have been Cortez Kennedy's 50th birthday. So here is his sign off from the Hall of Fame back in 2012. But until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
Now, this moment, it's all about those who came to gave themselves along the way. Those who provide the support and those who have cheered. It's all about the 12th man. It's all about those who have come before and those who will come after. It's all about my beautiful daughter, Courtney. It is all about the players and friends I laughed with over the years. It is about all my teammates I cried with over the years, both in victory and defeat. It's not about winning or losing. It's so much bigger than that. It's about the relationship and about sharing and working hard together. It's about not taking a shortcut. God bless America and God bless the Seattle Seahawks. Thank you very much.